Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
What a beautiful throw by the Baker!
Victor! Hasta la vista, baby! Touchdown!
Welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown, part of the Blue Wire Podcast Network. Thank you for joining us. This is your Fridays with John Colosimo version, where we break down how the Browns beat the Bears, and then we go around the NFL. And listen, John, welcome in, first of all. I got to fire this quote at you from Kingsbury. I don't think you've heard it, have you?
No, what are you talking about?
All right, let's hit this quote. It's an all-timer from a guy who still has a job, bro. Hear this out. This is Cliff Kingsbury talking about his pride with play calling. He said, I have zero pride when it comes to play calling, something he learned at Texas A&M's offensive coordinator in 2012 with Johnny Manziel as his quarterback. So before he got the tech job, he was with Kevin Sumlin and A&M. He says, quote, when you coach Johnny football, you take the wins as you can get them. You don't worry about being on time for meetings or showing up for practice some days. You just get him out there Saturday, let him go, and collect a check. What the hell? What is that quote? You're still a head coach in the NFL, man, and you're just like, this is how you've come to accept. What is your take? What the hell?
First of all, this is a guy with one of 32 jobs in the world, and it wasn't all that secure to start this year, at least in the eyes of the public. I don't know how secure he personally feels with his owner out in Arizona, but. That blows my mind that somebody with, you know, that's something that somebody at like the Browns ex coaches bowl, talks about three whiskeys in,
it's really bad. He's got to feel secure, right?
And like, how do you not just relate that directly to having a guy like Kyler Murray, given what Kyler has done, the first couple of weeks of this season? You know, I don't know, like, you know, how you could just like say something stupid when you're newly on a job. And, you know, I don't know, like that seems really dumb to say something like that when Kyler is out there doing crazy shit for you on your Sundays right now. And you've just won a couple of games in September in a tough ass division. I think that's really risky, and I wonder how many drinks he was in when he said it.
Yeah, that's a quote that you would have heard maybe on the Talking Coach or some Flying Coach they had the podcast this year with McVay. It feels like a private quote, but yeah, nonetheless, we knew that about Johnny. That stuff's come out, but I just had to be like, wow, to let that fly off the riff that's when you decided to not care about your ego or your pride with calling plays. That's when, okay. It's just a funny quote, man. Let's before we get to how the Browns beat the Bears, let's travel around the AFC North. Listen, Pittsburgh loses. We know, I always love when Pittsburgh loses because the things that go around social, like there was a tweet I saw when Pittsburgh lost and it was like, it came out maybe Tuesday when the all 22 drops for everybody. Like, there are 31 teams playing offense in the NFL. Then there's whatever the hell the Steelers are doing. And it was like four receivers are running in the same direction. I just got a kick out of it, John, because they had this, like, I just sit back and watch sometimes. You know, everybody gets excited about something about their team in the preseason. It's you look over, and we do it too. You look over the bad, but you're pumped, and there's no way this can go wrong. And they hired Matt Canada, and they're like, hell yeah, man, this is going to be great. We're going to use all this motion. We're going to use all this misdirect. They've done none of it. They don't do it because they can't do it. And Ben is a statue, and they're lost. And yeah, he goes 27 to 40 for 295. Congrats, man. But he's grading poorly in the decision-making. And even, you know, Joe Thomas is pretty, I think he's pretty tame. And I don't know if you saw it, John, but his quote about Ben, like, lobbing grenades was the funniest thing in the world. But that's what he's doing. It is like 2 years, 3 years past the Manning situation, you know, where it was like, this just can't last anymore. That's where they're at. And then you go out and spend a first-round pick on Najee Harris. This is, everybody's so excited about Najee Harris. Going to be great. He's going to be the next Nick Chubb. Okay, cool. What is he? How many yards does he rush for this year? 60? He's rushed for 75, 80 yards in two games. Like, They were never going to change their identity. You don't run the football all the time from the gun in this division. In the NFL, you just don't do it. So I've been taking in a special level of enjoyment, and I know they snuck into Buffalo and won, but I still think the writing's on the wall here, man.
No, absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously the defense is still there. You know, although, you know, they get a blow with Watt having the abdominal injury. But, you know, this is a team that you had to hope. I had some respectable people tell me that this offseason that they were going to find ways to figure this offensive line out. And so, you know, I try to check myself a little bit, but I was in an argument with my younger brother right after, I think, the first day of the draft after they take Najee. And I'd made an argument to him that he thought was absolutely bonkers off the wall. I said, I'm not sure that the Bengals don't have a better offense than the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yeah.
And here we are after 2 weeks, and I think it's going to be a pretty close battle.
I do too. They're coming up this weekend, right? Pittsburgh and Cincy. That should be a fun one, actually. I think it should.
Oh, I'd like to watch that. Yes.
Yeah, so this is Pittsburgh goes to 1-1. They play Cincy this weekend. I'm going to try to check games kind of as we're live talking through this. The Ravens steal one from Kansas City, and just an all-timer, man. Like an all-timer of I'm keeping it candid on this pod. It's almost like Candid Fridays, dude, where I just can't believe how we overlook things with Lamar Jackson. I think Lamar's great. That's cool. I do. I really think he's a unique player, unlike any – Mike Vick gets all this credit for – I think Lamar's infinitely better. And I don't think that's me saying anything crazy there, but, like, I just think that there still, though, are these parts about how Lamar's playing – where he's not held accountable. He threw, and I said it to Waldman on yesterday's podcast, he threw two terrible interceptions in that game. The first one goes for 6, the next one is in the same quarter, I think, and it's thrown into triple coverage, and that's the part of, like, John, I'm talking about how these guys, it feels like they're playing different games sometimes. To do that in a game, if Baker does that, he is eviscerated for a week. He's eviscerated, but Lamar can go out and run and change. And again, kudos to Lamar, but the way he's judged because of what he can do with his legs and because of what opens up from what they can do running the football, that is so unique that it just gets glossed over. Now, kudos to them. Odafeowe with a great strip. I mean, Clyde Edwards-Helaire just seems like the ultimate waste of a pick for Kansas City, but I'm riffing a little bit. The Lamar stuff is just crazy to me. Like, it just feels like everything negative he does is glossed over. Everything he does correct, or, you know, everything he does correct is, like, blown out of proportion. And all of a sudden, I'm listening to the radio the last 2 days. I just catch little glimpses of the radio, and it's, God, he's playing better than ever. He is this unstoppable weapon. And I'm like, really? I get it. They're ridiculously hard to defend. But there's just a glossing there. Am I losing my mind? Don't just agree with me.
No. You know, because I think here's what you got to understand. You know, from my view, what I think is the rubber meets the road in January. And so where you can paper over a whole bunch of flaws by, you know, after throwing a bunch of balls in the dirt or into the hands of other receivers, into DBs, you know, you can make up for a lot of that in the regular season, but I truly believe that, you know, you're going to have to show me that you can play that poorly on one phase of the game and, you know, hero ball a couple of monster plays and have that win multiple games in a single elimination tournament against the NFL's best to get me to value that more. And I simply don't, okay? Because that's a real thing. You know, that's what you're talking about. We do this regular season thing and we get to the end of it. And at the end is a multi-game single elimination tournament where you can only lose once. And I don't think that that plays well. And it doesn't really get the proper respect, I think, when you're talking about getting the ultimate goal. And obviously we're in a we're in a society right now where those highlights are going to get major blast on multiple forms of media. And I think it's just getting a little bit overblown. And yeah, they play different sports, but ultimately you're going to have to play a higher level of ball just in general. However you're going to do it, you know, but you can't be making the kind of mistakes that you're talking about, in my opinion. And I think that's, you know, that's probably why Lamar doesn't have a second contract right now. You know, the one other thing I want to say real quick, and I'm sorry because it's a little bit of a tangent, but because we're talking KC and Baltimore, I will say that I am thankful that Andy Reid has so poorly played some of their resources via money or draft picks by spending, you know, what everybody said was okay as a luxury pick on Edwards-Helaire. That has blown up in their face. And that's the kind of thing that we need. I mean, you know, how grateful should you be that they've spent that, you know, that pick on Edwards-Helaire instead of getting a legitimate second option in the wide, you know, out wide for Patrick Mahomes? I'm very thankful for that. So thank you. I'm thankful that you have made what I think, and even, you know, Eric Eager over at PFF, a super fan of KC, would say was definitely a negative EV pickup in trading for Brown to, you know, to play on the offensive line. So, you know, I have to be thankful that we don't have the minds that are in Baltimore, which I think are very sharp minds in terms of roster building and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I just have to be thankful that they didn't draft a Patrick Mahomes and get to build around him. So, you know,
give us
a solid chance.
I'm with you, man. And they did change their coverage. We talked about it. They stopped playing man this week. They played a ton of zone, which to me is great, bodes well for Cleveland. Because I think the Browns handle zone coverage collectively far better than they do teams that get physical. I also don't think either of those two defenses are very good. I just don't. So you can fawn all over the offenses all you want, but I don't think those two defenses are very good. So when we look back at this at the end of the year, I think you're gonna see the metrics bear exactly that. I think they're gonna give up a lot of points. So moving on. I think Baltimore plays the Lions this week, so they should get another win, and the Lions are short week, all that stuff. So the Cincinnati-Pittsburgh game, Cincinnati comes off of a close loss, ended up being a close loss, but they were beat for a majority of that game until Justin Fields comes in, and he ends up turning it over. They get a big play off of what they did was sim pressured him, right? They put Logan Wilson up into the line of scrimmage, acted like they were bringing seven, bailed him at the last second. He undercut a crossing route that Fields was thinking was hot. That's the toughest. And I mean, those are great. That's what you want to see Cleveland doing, you know, is some of that stuff where linebackers act like they're coming, drop it underneath the crossing route, pick it off. And it got close late, but you could still see the warts that are all over Cincinnati. They're terrible out of empty, struggling on second down. The pass coverage or the pass protection isn't holding up. I still think they're a pretender, six, maybe seven wins. You got to get both wins over Pittsburgh. I think this year, John, you got to get both wins over Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. I just do. I think you could split Baltimore, but you got to get those two wins. And a bigger picture here, right, is getting KC at home. Like that to me is like what you need to do. No, you can't go to KC. You got to get them at home somehow.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Oh, I agree. You know, and I'll work my way to that part. But, you know, just to spend a second on Cincinnati, how far have we come from the public perception of Joe Burrow from four games in of last season? I mean, even the bomb that he had to Chase was just a brutally underthrown ball on accident, mm-hmm, that Chase came back and grabbed and then ran into the end
And he got all of his body behind that thing.
Oh, he heaved. And, you know, and he throws three picks on three straight passes. Am I right on that?
Yeah, it was. Three consecutive throws.
Yeah. So, you know, four games in last year, definitely, let's just go even two games because that was against the Browns. They come off their first game against the Browns, and most of the nation is talking about how Joe Burrow is better than Baker Mayfield. He's the best quarterback in the division. He is the future of the NFL. And here we are just 1 year later, and people are wondering if he has a strong enough arm to make it, regardless of injury status. They're questioning the Bengals' choices, which they should, because Taylor is terrible, and the idea of running empty with an, you know, in a quarterback coming off that kind of injury and those types of things seems pretty dumb to me. Yeah. It has to feel pretty bad. Like, you could have imagined this kind of an outcome for the Browns when they finally got their number one pick. I mean, think about being the Bengals and having Joey Burrow coming off of the best, or at least one of the best, collegiate seasons ever. Absolute slam dunk number one pick, and you take the guy, and you have the crappy coach, because we had the crappy coach, and you have the talent devoid team, because they had the talent devoid team. This could have been our fate, what we're looking at right here with the Cincinnati Bengals when we drafted Baker Mayfield, and it wasn't. And again, I think that's something to be thankful for.
Yeah, I think you're spot on. Cincinnati is, to me, going to float until they find the right coach. They have talent. They have to continue to overhaul that O-line, but they just are a year or two away still from being real contenders, and we'll see. I mean, Burrow is like, there are definite flaws in Joe's game that I still think people who have given him credit for or think he's there on some things, I do not see it yet. So we'll see how that shakes out with Cincy. Around the NFL, there was an article I found that I wanted to address with you real quick before we talk about how the Browns beat the Bears. That is poking holes at, I think it's, is it a Barnwell piece? No, it's ESPN Nation. Rating the biggest surprises of all 32 teams in 2021, which will continue and which are a mirage. The Browns have three sacks. That's the mirage. That's the thing here. Jake Trotter, our friend of the podcast, says he thinks it's a mirage. I think it's easy to say it's a mirage, but unless they start changing up how they cover, it's pretty serious, right? Like, that is, I don't know if I can call that a mirage right now. The talent says it shouldn't be. But for now, until they start playing differently and giving those guys a chance to get home, I don't know how you can say it's not a serious issue, right?
Yeah, I think this is one of the more disappointing things over the last, you know, over the first 2 weeks. And you don't want to overreact to what you're seeing, but it's not really reacting to what's happened in the first 2 weeks. It's more of a realization that what you saw the previous season is more than just not having the personnel that mm-hmm. Joe Woods wanted. So that, for me, I could be wrong, but I just want to be, you know, understood that I'm not reacting to the first 2 weeks of this season. I'm reacting thinking that we're really talking about 20 games worth of Joe Woods here. And this is just who he is, because anything that I wrote or talked about this team, and one of the reasons that you could expect this huge breakout year from Miles, when you could see this defensive line really cash some checks, is because we had the cover players to make these quarterbacks think for a second read, an extra half second, an extra tenth of a second would make the biggest deal in most Miles seasons since he's been in the league. Mm-hmm. I don't see how that plays in anymore. I think I have to just literally throw that in the rubbish and assume that he's going to be dealing with the same amount of time that he ever has been, even though we have monstrously upgraded and invested in the secondary because of the way Joe Woods, I think, he wants to run it. So, yeah, so it's frustrating. I don't think it's a mirage.
I right now it's not. I need evidence of the contrary. Pittsburgh's surprise is that the run game is still last in the league. Brooke Pryor says it is real. I think that is going to remain real. The Bengals' defense is much better. They're saying that's real. We'll see. I'm still not sold on that collective unit. I'm going to let them play somebody other than Chicago And I thought Minnesota laid an egg week one. We'll see when they play somebody real. And then Baltimore is that the run game is still the most dominant in the NFL. That's real. I do think it's real, too. I do. I mean, I almost think they can plug and play, and this is probably the biggest wake-up call for their franchise is that they don't have to invest in picks because what they do is so hard to defend. It's unique as hell. And again, I say it's the Navy of the NFL. It's the Air Force. It's the peak Georgia Tech. They are so tough to defend running the ball that it changes everything you do. And that's why, you know, people were like, I hate the back-to-back with Baltimore. I don't. I couldn't love it more because you get to invest three straight weeks in planning and prepping for these guys. Yeah, in the middle of it, you do play them, but you get 3 weeks of figuring. You like you can throw the normal stuff aside. We're going to prepare for this option approach that they come at you with, this power read, this power counter, this counter bash, like all of it. You get to just commit to it, not worry about having to play another game the next week against the Packers, you know, like prepare for them twice. I'm all about it. It's still really dang good, man, because it's something no one else sees across the league. The other 31 teams don't do it the way they do it. So, yeah, I think that is real. Go ahead.
Let me give you the flip side of that, though. Okay. What if we accept that this is the real thing, and I think I do. But what if the flip side of accepting that this is who they are the Navy, they are really, really difficult to defend. What if the flip side? The flip side of that is accepting that there's never going to be a, if we just get Lamar more receivers portion of the docket that happens every offseason and in every postgame thing. What if this being who they are means that doesn't really, that's never going to be a thing. That's never going to be the next level, that this is who they are and it doesn't really matter who they get. Out in the receiver side, because there's going to be a give and take if they ever do want to change that, because that's kind of how I feel right now is that, you know, there's always been this extra thing, right, where there's built in growth. Like, think about it just like a Fortune 500 company, right? Mm-hmm. There's this built in growth to this offense where if we just get Lamar number one receiver and, you know, this, that, and the other thing, then this thing is just going to become this whole other entity. And now I'm starting to think that, you know, as good as this thing is, and it's very good and it wins lots of games, I'm ready to retire this whole little forecast of additional things being added to it. I think that it's possible that this is what it is. Mm-hmm. And this dream of turning it into some kind of Super Saiyan version of itself is not really a thing. So That's what I would posit on the other side of that.
It's valid. It's valid. It could just be they're stuck with what they are, right? And that won't ever change for the better. It won't ever. I got to see it win a Super Bowl, much like you had to see these option teams, Georgia Tech included, win big games. I just think eventually you're going to have to throw it a lot. You're just going to.
Georgia Tech had flipping
Calvin
Megatron.
Johnson and okay. Demaryius Thomas, man. They had dudes.
Right? Yeah, all right. Man. Did that ever change who they were? Did that take them to some new level of offense? It did not.
No.
So, yeah. And I don't want to like say that there's some direct, obviously college pros, not the same thing. Lamar Jackson is not a player they ever had there, but I think it's a good thing to note that, you know, these, you know, if we're sitting here comparing them to similar offenses, that they had some of the best receivers in NFL, you know, in our NFL lifetimes. And it did not appreciably change those offenses.
I think that's fair. I think it's fair. They still have a lot to prove. But it doesn't change how unique they are, damn it. And I hate playing them.
No.
I hate that they're in this division. Agree. God, Lamar could have gone anywhere else. And now we have to see those guys twice a year. And I think even when they feature some of their more down years, which are, you know, could happen over the course of Lamar's career, they're still going to be tough. Like, they're not going to bottom out. It's just not in there. It's not in their MO, and the way they play is so unique that they will just like, you know, again, I go back to it, just like those Tech and Navy teams, they won games. They just find ways to, even in the, when they're bad, they win six or seven games, you know, so.
Even when they lose, they're a pain.
Yeah, yeah, that's a fact. You know, I what was that? It was a year Ohio State opened with them, and they specifically opened with them because they wanted to prepare for it and spend extra time. But they said, we will not play you unless we can open with you. because
they played them in Raven Stadium. Yeah, I was there. I lived in Maryland. I bought the tickets. I went to the game. Yes, I remember the exact game you're talking about.
I think it was the opener. I think what I heard was that they wanted it to be the opener. I could be wrong. Some Ohio State fan listening to this
might
correct me. But I thought it was the opener, and the thing was, we'll play you, but we have to open with you so we can spend a month preparing for it, because, you know, playing Kent State and then going to play Navy is miserable. Even with great Ohio State teams, you can find yourself on the wrong side of the scoreboard if something you can't figure it out, right? You got to figure it out on the fly. Anyway, we're again floating off in the distance. Let's talk about how the Browns beat the Bears. So the Bears feature a really good defense in terms of personnel. I don't know that they were not as good. 2019 was their most dominant version when they went to the playoffs and should have won the what was that? Was that the Doink game or was that 2018? I can't remember.
I think it was 2018. Was it 2018? I could be wrong.
You're probably right. That's the most dominant version they've had in a while. They were turning the football over like crazy, converting those points off turnovers. Trubisky was, you know, playing decent football back then, but they couldn't overcome it. Lost that playoff game on a double doink from Parkey, right? And they really haven't been the same since, partly because Mitch never developed like they thought he should, but they still have some of those dudes, right? They still have Khalil Mack. Hasn't played great the first two games, kind of like Miles. But he's still Khalil Mack, and at any given moment, he could have a 5-sack game. Robert Quinn, Roquan Smith. I don't know if Eddie Goldman's going to play. It's a big part of their issue as the middle of their defense without Eddie is a problem. He's still limited this week. They still have Akeem Hicks, who's still damn good. They got this Jalen Johnson kid, who's a pretty solid corner. They still have Eddie Jackson, pretty good safety. But they're like 8 deep on defense. They have 3 guys who are just terrible. So this is, to me, a very big Finding Waldo game. You know, where can we pick on them that can allow us to keep drives alive, right? Where can we pick on them that allows us to take a shot play down the field? How can we manipulate them to get this corner, not Jalen Johnson, the opposite corner in an island so we can try to take advantage of it? That's what I'm paying attention to most on offense. And two, John, like this entire battle of the box, like I think the Browns offensive line is as good as it gets. It's not even just a Cleveland thing anymore. Everybody believes it. And I think the Bears have a really talented, not to say they're producing the best right now, but a very talented group of box players and their outside backers who rush the passer. So I'm going to be really fascinated. And I should mention, too, they play Tayshaun Gibson, as we all remember. So anyway, that's where I'm at on offense, picking on certain players. There are some very, very obvious weaknesses for me. That's how I would approach it, isolating certain players, whether off play action, whether out of empty, whatever you want to do, pick on those guys. And two, let's see what we can establish in the run game early to see if there are some holes we can pick. They cannot, as we broke down O-line play with Kyle Murphy earlier this week on the Twitch show, they can't afford 4 negative run plays like they had this past weekend. They can't do it. You can't sustain drives with two or three and then getting into 4 negative run plays. It's so hard to overcome.
No, I agree. And, you know, I trust this offensive staff to be able to play that game in a way that I don't trust our defensive staff to take advantage of the same kind of weak points. So I do think that you're right. We got to find our huckleberry on every play and exploit it. And I think that this offensive staff and the personnel should be capable of doing that. I mean, we got Odell back, which is a whole other element of what's going to happen in terms of this. You know, it could go well, could go bad. I don't know. I tend to be optimistic about it. Like I've said in some of the articles I've done recently is that I've become more and more convinced that the Odell going down and Baker rising narrative is not correct. And I'm hopeful that we're able to see some of that play out. And if there's anybody ready to exploit something like that, I think Odell can do that. And I'm excited to see that happen. You know, I think we're over, you know, on defensive side, I think we're overemphasizing stopping the run. It could work to our favor this week in helping to stifle the Chicago run game. But at the same time, I'm scared about another mobile quarterback with our defense that has over pursued, I think, on every game. And I don't have a ton of faith that we're going to all of a sudden find 100% containment, and I definitely have no faith whatsoever that we're going to start spying. But we do have a rookie quarterback we're going against. We do have better personnel than we've had, at least since week one. And I think that it should be pretty interesting to see that battle. It's definitely, if it's not interesting, it's something that I'm grading Woods on. I want to see what he does in this type of situation where you expect him to come up with a plan that is at least sound. At a bare minimum, if he does not rein in this defensive line and choke some contain for this rookie quarterback to make things more difficult, if he doesn't disguise anything, if he doesn't do anything else, at least have disciplined rush lanes to force more difficult throws. I think that is such a bare minimum thing, and that's what I'm bare minimum asking out of Joe Woods this week.
Yeah, stop burying your head, right? You know, when you go in, whether you're rushing your gap assignment or you're twisting, exchanging, I do notice that a lot of times these guys are burying their head and they're not seeing the quarterback make an initial move, and that's why we've seen so many times Miles swiping at the feet. They're trying to chase him down instead of being proactive, keeping your head up, and then being able to make a move to get rid of the O-lineman to go get the quarterback. You want some of that. I actually texted John Costco earlier and I said, hey man, I said, how many 5+ pressures do you see in this past week, week two? He said 3, which is the same thing I saw that was unbelievable. They didn't even blitz. They didn't 5+ pressure, bring 5 guys or more, what I deem a blitz, at all in the second half against a rookie, Davis Mills. They simulate pressure. What a sim pressure means is you disguise what you're going to do, show something, do something different. The Delpit sack, they took both defensive ends and dropped them and ended up the drop took the right tackle's eyes off of his outside. And Grant Delpit comes off the edge. That's what you're trying to do. Kudos. Love those. Do them every now and again. They got to blitz Justin Fields. They got to confuse this kid. If they don't confuse him and they let him and Nagy or whoever the hell is calling plays in Chicago these days sit there and feel comfortable with every single situational call, it's going to be an effing nightmare, because they do have two good receivers. Allen Robinson can play, flat out play, and Darnell Mooney can play too. So they got dudes, man. They got guys. They're better than Houston significantly in terms of like player talent. The offensive line sucks. So that's a big part of why I want to take away some first reads, move Justin to a second and third, is because you can take advantage of a pretty bad O-line. I mean, they're starting Lane Johnson on one side. I could be wrong about that. I'd have to look at it. I had this up earlier. Let's see if I can pull it up quickly. Nobody go anywhere. I don't think anyone's going anywhere. I think it's Lane Johnson that's starting at left tackle. Jason Peters. So I was confused with the Kansas City veterans. Old Eagles veterans. Jason Peters, 39 years old, is starting at left tackle for them. Their interior of Whitehair, Sam Mustafa, and James Daniels, the Iowa kid we all liked, is really struggling. Jermaine Afadi is really struggling. You gotta find a way to create some sacks, man. And you better confuse Justin Fields, because if you let him get comfortable and you let him feel good about where he's escaping the pocket, we all saw the dude at Ohio State. I think he can play. I think that he's got a big learning curve he's going to go through and is going through, but he can play. He will also turn the rock over if you pressure him into some poor decisions. But if you do not, and this is such a generic thing, but you really have to find a way to confuse him. Any rookie quarterback, what's the saying, man? Make the game feel fast. And if you're playing passively and you're playing to not give up the big play all the time, it's going to be ugly, man. It's going to be frustrating and they're going to hang around. So get up and pressure people. If you're playing cover three, stop playing deep cut. Like walk up and press bail and cover three. Get up in their face. Show some different looks. And let John Johnson get toward the line of scrimmage every now and again, man. Let him be the dude we know he can be. For lack of a better phrase, unleash him some so that he can be the game changer I think John Johnson can be, and why you signed him, right? Like, don't just stick him back at split high or single high and say, hey, man, go make. No, he's an up at the line of scrimmage, actively involved dude. I've been saying it all week. His usage here has been completely different than his time with the Rams, and it needs to change. Give Grant Delpit a chance to do that center field role. I think he's comfortable doing. I like the personnel, John. I had followed up your tweet today with, like, they did play Dime like 18 snaps, which is a good number. I don't mind that. I could like to see it creep up a little bit more, but that's a good number. And they were playing nickel like 27 times. So they're not just sitting in bed. They're doing some of the things. We know Woods before the year talked about, I'm more of a nickel guy than a dime guy, but he is moving into the direction of bumping Ronnie Harrison down, letting him play dime backer and getting kind of creative there. So I just hope they give that creativity a chance with 43 as well.
No, I agree. I mean, I think that the nightmare scenario is somewhat similar to what we saw against Kansas City, which is over pursuing defensive ends, making it very easy for Fields to extend plays with his feet and, you know, just step up in the pocket and, you know, make a, you know, a 2 second drop into a 4 second drop. And then we're sitting passive in coverage, covering grass, and somebody will get open, right? That's the nightmare scenario. That's what they have to be hoping that Cleveland is going to do. So I'm asking Joe Woods to not do that. And I think you're right. We saw some different personnel usages based on having Grant Delpit, I would think, based on not having Walker and those types of things. So hopefully, you know, just those kind of things and maybe having a more disciplined rush help us to make that look different. But, you know, that's my nightmare scenario. I just do not want to allow Justin Fields to extend plays and play some backyard ball. And, you know, he's not Mahomes. And they, you know, Robinson is not Tyreek Hill. And they don't have a Travis Kelce. You know, but I don't want to go home on Sunday feeling like we did this Sunday defensively, where – you know, these guys do way more than you think they should against us and make a game that shouldn't be close, let alone something even worse than that. But I'm not really considering that so much, not in a home game. So hopefully that's what we see. And I'd like to, like, you know, like you've covered a bunch of times, I don't want to see those blitzes from depth. I know you mentioned the other day that Delpit one was from depth. Are you sure that was? I thought he was close to the line on the side on that one versus like being 5 yards out.
Like he was he was creeping. If you go watch it, that snap point, he's about 4 yards off the ball. I mean, he wasn't static or anything, but he wasn't walked up.
Okay.
Yeah, he wasn't walked up, but, you know, I'm okay. Excuse me. I'm okay with a depth blitz if you have a great feel for it. Like, they ran a depth blitz, one of the first half blitzes, right? So picture in your head a 4-2-5, right? You got a slot corner. The Texans are playing two by two. They're playing two wide receivers on both sides, a back in the backfield, a quarterback. The Browns are playing nickel. They've got the safety walk down to the quarterback's left, kind of hovering with the wheel backer hovering over. Splitting the difference between one and two. Then they got Troy Hill to the quarterback's right in the slot, and you got Malcolm Smith as your backer. They brought Malcolm Smith, and they brought help me out here. I'm forgetting his name now. They brought Troy Hill. They brought both of them from depth, and nobody replaced. They were playing cover four behind it, and nobody replaced, and there was the simplest replace-the-blitz throw I've ever seen. You had JOK running out the opposite direction. They also dropped Miles on that play as well. So the other side, so the defensive end of the quarterback's left drops into coverage. You have JOK dropping to his left as well, the quarterback's left as well. So those two are like on top of each other. And then you're bringing two blitzers. If you're seeing this from the quarterback's eyes, they're bringing two blitzers off the quarterback's right side with nobody dropping to where they vacated. The safety doesn't roll down. The corner doesn't cheat up. It's the easiest 9 yard throw to Danny Amendola ever. And it's like, that type of blitz effing sucks unless you're going to replace it, because the simplest quarterback 101 stuff, John, is that you replace the blitz with the throw. And if you don't replace somebody where the blitz is coming from, hey-o, it's an easy effing pitch and catch. So they just, I'll say this, if they're so uncomfortable about blitzing because they don't think their guys can handle it, then what are we doing? Because this is supposed to be graduate level football, where you bring in smart football players who've been exposed to smart football schemes through their life and can absorb, collect, and process what you want them to do quickly because they've been exposed to it for like 15 years of football now. There should not be an issue teaching. If there is, what are we doing when these guys are hurt? Because something's not getting through. Like, we should not be in week two saying, I don't know if we can call more than three pressures in this game because I don't think the guys can handle it. What? Like, that can't be the outcome, John. It can't be.
Think about the utter contrast between that and what we had to deal with on offense at the end of last season when we had to have Callahan sticking guys that Baker Mayfield hadn't even met. You know, like the utter contrast between what's happening on the offense and what's happening on the defense, regardless of the talent pool, because we've seen the offense pull guys out of the dirt. I mean, outside of the crazy game where we lost every wide receiver and had to play all practice squad guys. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's such a weird dichotomy where, you know, I think that we have, honest to God, I think the best top to bottom, including all the sub coaches, everything like that. We have the best coaches in this league on the offensive side of the football. And to watch them operate through adversity versus, you know, what we deal with on the defensive side, where we just have provided every excuse possible. And, you know, the expectation level, I think that's, you know, regardless of everything else, let's just talk about the expectation level is so much lower. I mean, the we're grading on such a massive curve on the other side. And I think that at this point, it's just a ridiculous thing to do. And I'm tired of it. You know, it's like listening to Nagy, speaking of the Bears, you know, talk about how, you know, you have to understand this offense takes several years to really kind of take foot. Meanwhile, Kevin Stefanski installs the wide zone offense over fucking Zoom meetings.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
And during a pandemic. All right. Get out of my face with that stuff. All right. Yeah, and I'm just getting that just shouldn't be
the excuse from Woods. And I don't know if he'll talk to the media later this week or not, but like I need to know really why he's not doing things that are more creative. Like, I just need to know. If your answer is our guys aren't ready, we got too many new faces, then I need to start seeing an uptick like now, because teams always are overhauling their rosters and bringing in different pieces. And that's never going to change in Cleveland. That's never going to change. It's the game, man. And if you can't get guys ready until midseason with this much talent, there's a problem there. There's a problem there. So I'm not calling the Joe Woods mob. I'm not trying to get him fired, but I need to see some change. And as we're talking about here, this week is the week for some change, because you have a young quarterback who's not used to the different variations of coverage. He wants it to be black and white. He doesn't want to have any gray area. I'm sure his coach feels the same way. So they better take advantage. He's John Colosimo. This is Fridays with the man himself. I appreciate you, John. As usual, thanks for your time, buddy.
Have a good one, bud.
All right, signing off for the night. Thank you guys for joining us on this lovely Friday. I hope you guys have a great day and have a great weekend. We will be back tomorrow with our mock draft. We'll return into our mock draft phase where we look at Stephen Thomas's mock draft from earlier in the week and go through, talk about the prospects that are going to play, talk about everything around the draft that the Browns might be interested in. It's just a fun little thing to do to break up the monotony of every single day being about the Browns. It's a nice thing to keep an eye on. So you hear those names that could be of interest to the Browns later on. You're keeping track of the big games, the big players, those of interest. I think it's a cool thing. I had a couple people ask why it wasn't out last week. Timing didn't work. It was traveling. Craziness. Back on that schedule. Continue to check out the OBR's work. Great analytics pieces going up this week. Check all of those out. A couple different film rooms. I've put up Grant Delpit. I'll put up the All-22. I have put up the All-22. Check that out. I've combined offense and defense this week. Appreciate you joining. Again, numbers are off the charts, and that's because you guys support this podcast and everything around it. I thank you guys so much for that. It's really unique, and it blows my mind, and you guys are cool. You guys are the best. So appreciate you and everything you do to support this thing, and my Twitter and all of that, like I've said. Thanks to John again for joining today. He's the best. Make sure you're following him. Good insights, good conversations. Take advantage. Have a great Friday, guys. And, you know, we'll catch in with you Saturday morning before college football kicks off. Appreciate you again. Go Browns.
there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.